Hey, incredible parents, I have a special message about the Recess Project. Imagine every child having the chance to play freely. The Recess Project is on a mission to transform school playgrounds into inclusive spaces for kids with disabilities. They work with schools and communities, fundraising to make school playgrounds more accessible. They're making a real impact, and you can be a part of it. Head to their website, therecessproject.org, to donate, and let's make recess accessible for all children. We're not just talking about it. We're actively supporting a cause that matters. So join us in backing the Recess Project and creating inclusive playgrounds, because every child deserves a playground where they can just be kids.
You're listening to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast with Courtney and Brittany.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Courtney. And I am so excited to welcome our guests today. We have two other mamas on with us today, both of which are very close to Brittany and I. They have children that also have the same brain injury as Cyrus and Lino. And we have Hope here and Rachel. Hope has her son, Logan, who, if anybody knows or follows us on Instagram, is Lino's doppelganger. And our lovely Rachel, her wonderful daughter, Aria. I just am so happy to have you guys on here today. We're going to talk about, these are topics we always kind of touch on, but we want your perspective of parenting as single mamas, because this life is hard regardless of your marital status or your partnership. This life is just hard. But I think that the two of you really have such an interesting perspective, and I really want to get your voices heard, because for Brittany and I, we obviously talk to you guys a lot behind the scenes. We're part of that mama group that we talk about a lot. And, we know all the things that you guys are always constantly navigating. And I really hope to shed some light today and get your voices heard so that other people can see how fucking broken this system is, because it's really fucking broken. But why don't we start with just like a little bit of intros? Hope, you want to go first? Give us a little intro.
I'm Hope, and my son is Logan. He's 3.5. He is just crazy. And he has Lino's doppelganger, has been since like day one, pretty much. We've always just laughed and laughed about how much they look alike. And sometimes like we'll message each other on Instagram, we'll be like, I had to do a double take. I thought that was Logan, or I thought that was Lino. And it's so funny.
I've literally had family members be like, who's that lady with Lino? And I'm like, that's not Lino.
It's so funny. And it never gets old. And they go through phases where they like look less alike, but then all of a sudden they are like twins again. But I love it. I think it's so funny, and we need to get them together. But he has HIE, he has spastic quad CP, all the things pretty much. Epilepsy. That's probably our biggest struggle. But he is smart. He's funny. He's very loving. I think if he could just cling to me all day, he would. But he recently started school, so that's been kind of like a new thing to navigate. He's never really been away from me, but he is just thriving at school, and I love to see it.
I love to see that too. Prior to Logan's birth, what did you do, Hope?
I was trying to find my way still. I was 25, I think, when he was born. And previously I'd worked in marketing and sales and got laid off, but was kind of living my best life, honestly. I was working a couple jobs. I was working in the press box for our local minor league team, which baseball is like my favorite sport. I live, eat, and breathe it. So it was really fun to just work. I was busy. I was working like every single day. But that's really what I love, is like game day operations, marketing, sales, all that in regards to baseball. So hopefully, you know, one day I can get back into that, but it's not really, the schedule is not at all conducive to being a single parent. So that's kind of what I was doing. And now I'm just a stay-at-home mom.
You're not just a stay-at-home mom. You're an awesome mom. But this is also a good segue to kind of touch base with Rachel, because you're both very similar in that your age is pretty close, and you were both at the stage of your lives where you were like finding who you were, developing a career path, like all these things. So why don't you give us a little background about you, Rachel?
Hi, so I'm Rachel. I have a daughter named Aria. She is 3.5. She's like about a month older than Logan, so they're pretty close in age. Aria also has HIE, CP. She's tube fed. She's a sweet little girl. She's starting now to get more of a personality, becoming a little bit more opinionated and sassy, but she's obsessed with her mom. We have to pretty much be attached at the hip like 24/7, which has just been our life since she was born. But she's a sweet, loving little girl, loves music, loves anything that makes funny voices, silly sounds. That's kind of a little bit, I guess, about her. But
Rachel, I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to get your insights about how difficult it can be when you're in a situation where you can't work because you have to stay home to care for your daughter. But the way that the system is built, particularly government assistance, whether that's Social Security or Medicaid, you know, all those sorts of benefits, you've mentioned, and you can go into more detail how, you know, you really did have a very clear career path. Like you went to school, you had a goal in mind, and now it's like, you can't get off this cycle as much as you want to get off the cycle and provide more and go out there and have a job and do all these things. Do you want to talk a little bit about how government assistance can pretty much block that from every angle?
So prior to having Aria, I had, Aria was born in 2020. I had just graduated college in 2018. So I started in a career, literally around the same time I graduated, I started in my career. Prior to that, I worked, I was working, two, three jobs while I was going through college, and then graduated and was finally like, okay, I'll just work like two jobs. I'll work my main career job and then something on the side. I always was like busy. So I have a bachelor's in psych and with human development and family studies. So I have actually a lot of background with mental health, which did, I think, help in some ways throughout this, traumatic events of her birth and navigating this new life and everything like that. I just started working in like a psychiatric unit where I was working rehabilitating patients, getting them back into like a functional place in society kind of thing, which was really a passion for me. I've always wanted to be a helper and, give to people in some way. Then when I had Aria and, she had all the complications that she did, it was weird because I quickly was just like, I'm not coming back from a maternity leave. I can't, which was a weird kind of thing, but I knew that was the only choice that I had. I couldn't, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do financially, but I know I can't go back to work next week or next month, I don't know what's going on with my baby. So basically they kept in contact with me. And I think she was born in February, I think as of April, I kind of was like, it's not something that's changing. I'm not coming back to work kind of thing. And just because I already had knew prior to that, I already was going to be a single mom regardless of her outcome. I knew it was going to be difficult, stepping into that life with that. But since then I've kind of had to, figure out other ways to make ends meet, So we got her on Social Security, which thankfully she was approved, and we got on wait lists for housing and, any kind of assistance that could be given to help someone in the situation. And even though now at this point it took a year and a half for us to even get any housing assistance, which was rough during the pandemic and everything that was going on. So now thankfully that we have this housing assistance, it's still obviously it's helpful. I wouldn't be able to survive if we didn't have this bit of financial help with that. But it's just a life I'm so unfamiliar with and so uncomfortable with because I've worked my whole life to not live in this way and not that I'm obviously shaming anyone that needs it because these supports are here for a reason. And I'm so thankful that, you know, she does get SSI, and we were, you know, some states I don't even think have as good of housing programs as Ohio does. So I'm glad that we were at least able to get that to like help us get in a somewhat better spot. But it's just like this tricky line now where it's like, one, I can't work because my daughter requires, you know, full care, and I can't just leave her with someone. So I couldn't work even if I was able to. And I'm teetering on this line now where it's like, I can't work because I will lose everything that we're getting. And then as expensive as everything is nowadays, there's no way I can't afford for my rent to go up, you know, like I can't afford for my food to go up or for my bills to go up. So it's like, I have to stay poor enough to like require these forms of assistance, you know, to literally just stay afloat. And I feel like it's been worth, you know, 3.5 years in, and it's just awful to navigate. And it's still not anything I'm in, you know, entirely like comfortable with, and just, it's a headache, you know, 24/7.
You know, there's so many critics about government assistance, and I don't want to put my taxes towards this and yada, yada, yada. And
that's another thing.
These are genuine needs that people, families have for their disabled children. And this system, it's like they on paper want it to look like, hey, we don't want you to want this forever, but they don't really give you guys an opportunity to
get out of it.
Well, and the asset limits haven't changed since the program was like conceptualized in like the 70s or something, which is just outrageous, because what about inflation or just like getting with the time?
Exactly.
I mean, it's,
we finally got Medicaid for Leno. It took like forever and a day. And in the state of New Jersey, Leno can't have any assets over, I think it's like $2,600 or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it's insane.
And the
thing that's crazy too is like, technically as like their parent as well, we're not allowed to have assets. So like,
yes. So that's the problem I have with Social Security. Yes.
Yeah. If we have money in our bank account, or if we have, like, God forbid you're, for some reason you have two cars, they're like, there's no reason you should have two cars. Only one is necessary to function. And if it's over some, it's for our family. Yeah. It's insane. Like it, and it really sucks, because I don't think it was fit at all for, you know, families that are caring for someone that has a disability, or someone in general that just has a disability. Like, it's not set up for those people at all.
I mean, they do a cost of living adjustment every year, but it's like 3%. So this year, the max you can get is 914, unless your state has a supplement. So we're like scraping by on 914 a month, because I can't work either. Logan, he can't go to daycare. There's nobody to watch him. Like, so luckily, like, I bought a new car in 2018 when I graduated, or like when I, you know, went off and got my first job and did all that. I got a new car. Thank God I was smart, got a like reasonable car with a really good monthly payment. And so that's like super cheap, thankfully. And then my car insurance, which is like almost as much as my car payment. But like, that, and then you don't even factor in everything that, you know, he needs, and then my needs. Like, 914 goes quick. There's a lot of months where we have zero money the last 2 weeks of the month, and so you're just like, well, hoping something doesn't go wrong. And it does.
Yeah, that's pennies. That's pennies.
Yeah, and thankfully I live in my mom's house. I don't have to pay rent per se, but I have to pay rent, or else SSI will go down to like five something.
What?
It's called in-kind support.
What?
So if someone helps you with food or rent, they take away like two-thirds of your, or a third of your check.
What?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So I pay rent to my mom. And so, I mean, like, thankfully I do have this, or else I don't know what we would do, because where I live, we don't have housing. Like, the wait list has been closed for years here. We would be homeless.
I'm not even sure I have words right now. I think my brain is still processing what you just said.
And I think that's what people don't understand, that even in like the best case scenario, it's so hard to find childcare before kids enter into the public school system, because privatized daycare, they're not going to take kids like ours. I mean, they go down the list, oh, this. Nope, we're not going to be responsible. If they do take kids like ours, they're not going to provide any type of services, let alone anything like nursing care. And even if you do get a daycare that will take your kid, like, daycare is so fucking expensive. It's insane. I mean, some of our closest friends, husband and wife, working two jobs, you know, and they're like, oh, yeah, good thing I work so that I have, you know, $30 at the end of the week because I paid all this for daycare.
How much you would pay for daycare is more than, like, an hourly rate of, like, an average job. So that's not even feasible. And just interject real quick, BTW, Brittany has a cricket, a rooster, and Sir Cyrus in the room. So if you hear all that ambient noise, that's just,
like,
you know,
ASMR, right? Is that what it's called? You're welcome. I'm just here to help calm everybody. No, but so I was talking to, we went out Saturday night and I was talking to a friend, and back to, like, the daycare thing, and he was saying they have two kids now, and he was like, our oldest daughter is in daycare. He's like, we're not putting our son into daycare yet because we pay $16,000 a year for one kid for daycare. And I was like, what? And he's like, oh yeah, if we put,
that's more than I make in a year.
Yeah, he's like, if I put my, and this isn't like, it's not like a Montessori school or anything fancy, it's just a daycare, and he's like, if we put my son in daycare, we're now paying double that. And I was like, wait, don't they do, like, a discount, like, some places? He's like, no, they don't fucking do that anymore. And I'm like, oh my god, like, that much money for a daycare is wild to me. Wild. And then as parents, then we have the you know, constant worry that something's gonna go wrong, because even with kids that aren't disabled, things go wrong at daycares. They scare the shit out of me.
We have a lot of daycares in my area that have a lot of negative press for valid reasons, and I would never send my child, disabled or not, to a single daycare in my area. So if, I don't know what I would do, but I guess find, like, a babysitter? I don't know. But that's not even an option with him, so, because how am I going to pay for a babysitter?
Yeah.
Right.
I know, it's so hard just to navigate this life as parents, period, right? Because child care is an issue across the board, especially for the lifestyle that it is in the United States. Everybody says it takes a village, right? But nobody delivers that village. Right? We all know this. And this is not just in the disability community. This is, like, this is parenting. Apparently, we all just have to do it alone in the United States.
Yep.
Because a lot of other countries and cultures are very different how they function. But then you pile on the medical complexities of our children, and it becomes, oh my God, 1,000 times harder to navigate this. Because I know in my situation, I may not be a single mom, but I can't freaking find childcare for the life of me. And I certainly don't trust anybody, right? I know you guys probably feel the same way. Like, if it's not somebody you really genuinely know, trusting a stranger with your disabled child and all their medical needs is not even an option, you know? And then you even run into, I know Brittany just briefly mentioned, you know, preschool, but there's even the problem of school districts and school issues. I know, Rachel, you recently were looking into putting Aria in school, and we're having so many complications. And for you right now, school is not even something that's a reprieve where you can try to, like, okay, she's in school, let me work, or, like, that's not an option. I know that it was really complicated what you were just going through.
Yeah. We did her, like, eval and everything earlier this year when she turned 3, and we went, we saw the school, which, first of all, well, what actually the neighborhood I live in now is, like, fine, but, like, the city in general that I live in is, like, not a great city in Ohio. Really bad crime, really bad, just everything around here is just very bad. And the school district is just atrocious in general. I wouldn't send my neurotypical child to the public school here, but I was like, you know what, we'll just do the evaluations for, like, shits and giggles. We'll see how it goes. Like, and it was just awful. And they, which unfortunately seems like it's the norm in some ways for, you know, kids like ours going to school, but like they would not give her any form of like an aide or anyone to be with her. They told me she would just be in a classroom with like 12 kids. There would be one aide for the whole classroom. She'd probably be the only medically complex child in the classroom. But I'm like, that's not, that doesn't work. Like Aria requires pretty frequent like oral suctioning. I'm like, she needs someone with her, like in case she coughs, in case she needs suction. She can't wait, you know, while this aide is going and helping another child, like to be like, oh, hold on, Aria, I'll be there in a minute. Like she can't wait. Yeah. So I'm like, she needs like a one-on-one, you know, aide, nurse, whatever it may be. And they're like, well, you'll just like have to fight for that. And I was like, truthfully, I don't want to fight for that. Honestly, like to send her here. No, I don't want to. And then the school, the only school that they would send her to was in a really, really bad neighborhood. And I'm like, I don't even feel comfortable driving down the street, let alone dropping my disabled child off here with these kids here, with just like everything. So I was like, no, we're not going to do that. So it was just a mess. And I kind of just told him like, sorry, we're not doing anything right now. I know they're at the therapy center she goes to for like just her regular like PT, OT, and speech. They have like an alternative school program there, but it's like an hour-ish away from where we live. For her to go to school there, I feel like is just a lot, like to drive an hour for her to go to school for like 2 hours a day. Potentially, I can look into it maybe when she's older, but I just feel like right now, well, one, she just had a major surgery, so it's like not a good time at all for her to go to school. And just the public school is just a mess, and I just don't have the energy to fight for them, fight to give her this when I know she's just safer being with me, being in an environment that she's safe and comfortable in, which maybe school could be beneficial in some ways, but I feel like at this time, her being home and just doing her normal therapies and stuff is better than trying to cause more stress to put her into school in an area that's not great for her anyways.
I think what all of us expect or ask for as parents is really not as much as these school districts sometimes make it sound. And the fact that they're so combative about the care that our kids needs drives me crazy.
It'd be one thing if she didn't have all the medical complications on top of her like physical disability. I don't think it would be, it would probably still be difficult, but I would probably be a little more lenient towards having her go to, not to the public school, but to another school if I could find somewhere else for her to go. But like, I don't think children around here that are as medically complex and disabled as her go to school, unfortunately. And like, it's just, those parents are not going to find someone that is going to care for their kid like they do. And it's like hard, you know, because it would be nice for her. And I'm sure it would be nice to have like that little bit of like a break, I guess, you know, to send her to school. But it's just like, it terrifies me to think that like literally anything could happen. Like she'd go to school, aspirate, get pneumonia, be hospital, like anything could happen if she's not cared for in the way that she needs to be. And I'm scared to like put her at risk for that, you know, at least at this time.
I think that's what's crazy is we shouldn't have to fight for something that literally keeps our kids alive and keeps them safe, right?
And that's why I was so bothered. I'm like, I don't understand this. Like, why do I have to fight to get my child the thing she needs to safely go to school like everyone else? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And it just seems atrocious that I should have to fight for that. So I was just kind of like, I was just really put off by the whole school district, honestly. So I was kind of like, you know what? We're just going to keep to ourselves. And they'll probably harass me when she's around kindergarten age to be like, you got to do something, you know, at this point. But yeah, I don't know.
I feel like it also highlights how much of this system, no matter what it is, whether it's school, assistants, doctors, any of it, how much it tears us down sometimes. Like, I don't know about you guys, but there are some fights I'm like, I want to fight this, but I ain't got it in me.
For sure. And then when it's like Rachel and I, like everything falls on us. There isn't another person to bounce the ideas off of or, you know, our worries. It's us and that's it. So then you've got like double burnout and I can't see it. You make the decision this time. Like,
yeah,
it all falls on us. And I know like in a typical family structure, usually there's like a default parent, but you still have like your partner, your husband, whatever, to take some of that stuff. And we don't have that. So it's just really exhausting.
Yeah. And like making, in general, just making like big medical decisions, making decisions for surgeries, where do they go? Like all of that advocacy, all of that is just on your shoulders. And when, like, you sit and think about it, you're, like, in general, as any parent, you know, like you said, there's always going to be a default parent. We're always going to hold that weight. But yeah, it just feels like a lot when you're always like, I'm always second guessing myself, which I'm sure both of you guys do too. You know, like, am I making the right decision? Am I doing this? But it's like, I don't have anyone to ask that, like, truthfully sees it firsthand and, like, gets it.
Yeah, I think single parenting is hard from that perspective.
Do you guys feel or do you find in any situation, especially when it comes to, like, the medical side of things with, like, doctors and therapists and all that, do you ever feel that you have roadblocks put up by these people because you're single parents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or, like, if my mom happens to come with us to appointments, I've noticed, like, they'll talk to her. And she's like, I'm not his mom. Like, you need to talk to his mom. And so then they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. And I'm just like, yeah, like, I'm the one making the decisions. Like, talk to me. I'm 28. I'm not that young. Like,
wow. It wouldn't matter what your age is. Yeah, that's exactly. That's so disrespectful to disregard age, you. Yeah.
I am the mother. Thankfully, like, now the team that we have for him is amazing, and they don't typically do that. It's just more so, like, if we have a new, like, ER experience or something, they just kind of, like, totally disregard me, and I'm like, hello, I'm right here. So that gets really frustrating.
Yeah, I feel like you said too, as of recently, now that we've kind of been established with, I feel like now we're in a good spot where we haven't had new specialists coming in. We don't have, like, we're kind of at a basis where we're seeing every specialist that she does continue with, like, every 6 months. And it's just kind of a, hey, how's it going? You know, kind of part our ways. In the NICU, I feel like I got a lot of judgment. You know, I don't feel like I noticed it as much at the time. I mean, I'm sure I did, but, like, really looking back, I'm like, wow, like, that was really disrespectful how I was treated when she was in the NICU. And, like, I think I got some with, like, especially ER. For some reason, people in the ER are just a different breed of humans, but, like, every experience we've ever had going to the ER is just somehow, some way I'm getting judged. I'm getting looked at weird, like, you know, but, and especially men too, for some reason, it seems like more often men, they just talk down. And I don't know if it's just because I'm a woman in general, but, like, I just feel like you get talked down to a lot by, like, male doctors that don't know you, just get disregarded. Like, you're just ignorant. You don't know. And then they're surprised when you start talking about stuff. They're like, oh, you actually know what you're talking about. And I'm like, yeah, like, this is pretty much my whole life. You know, I hope I'm well-versed in this, but it's been a weird journey to, like, navigate that, you know, just trying to brush off that judgment, you know, just in general. I think there's just a negative stigma being a single mother in general. I just feel like it's exacerbated when you do have a medically complex child and just all the stares and the things you get, or, like, just doing everything in public and all of it.
I think it's interesting that you say that, like, because it really does come down to the stigma, because Courtney and I have discussed this in a previous episode, but sometimes when we go to a doctor's appointment and my husband's there with us, he will be completely ignored. And, like, it's like directly to me, and it's like, oh, mom knows everything that's going on. This, you know, just ditzy dad in the background. And it's the same thing where, like, people are so surprised if they hear that he does something, like, takes Cyrus to school. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, wow, what? And so in a situation where there is, like, you know, a partner, it's especially when it's, like, a man and a woman, it's, there is that default to mom. Like, like, Courtney, you've dealt with it before where it's like, talk to mom and ignore dad. And then here you guys are, two moms, and it's literally just the stigma around the fact that you guys are single mothers. And now suddenly you're treated completely differently. Where if you both walked in with a partner, that would be a whole different story than it would be, like, default to mom. Let's, you know, mom knows everything. It's very mind-boggling to me. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, it really is wild.
Right?
It's so wild.
And I don't know if you experience it or not, Hope, but, like, I feel like a lot of times I just feel like there's so much pity. People look at me with so much pity when I'm out and about, which, unfortunately, I'm sure people just look at Aria and they try to feel some kind of pity just because she's literally existing. But they see me, like, getting her wheelchair out of the car or, like, just doing anything. And they're just like, wow, wow, oh, my gosh, you have so much on your plate. I'm like, dude, like,
yeah, you know, thanks. It's just, that helps a lot. Yeah. State the obvious.
I have a question, and you both don't have to answer this if you don't want to. If you want to just say no thanks, that's fine. But I touched on the stigma from medical professionals and everything like that. I want to touch a little bit on the stigma from society. And this is kind of like a big all-encompassing thing that I see where there's a lot of victim blaming almost for women, right? And it kind of even goes back to the like, oh, she has daddy issues. And it's like, well, that makes her a certain way, right? But like, let's not talk about the dad that caused these issues, right? It's always skirting around the father issues, right? And so coming from your perspective as single mothers who I'm sure feel some sort of something from society, like none of that going towards the fathers. Like, does that make you feel a certain way? Because you're sitting here putting all the work in. Like, you're both putting all the work in. And you're doing it alone. And you're the ones that are faced with a stigma from this. And then it's like, well, hello.
Yeah, it's almost like, as a single mother, everything falls on us. But what about the dad? You know, like, why are they not held accountable for anything?
Yes.
Why are they just allowed to go off and live their life as if nothing happened?
Yes.
And I know Rachel and I both have experience with that. Whereas, like, I do still have contact with Logan's dad. I don't think Rachel does with Aria's dad, but it's minimal at best. He buys diapers and wipes. Woo. Like, you're really...
Hooray! Should we get him an award?
Yeah, probably. And you see him once a year, you know. But he's out there doing whatever he does, and I'm over here, like, killing myself daily with all of our tasks and meds.
And emotionally and physically, too. That's the thing. It's not just emotional. It's not just the mental load. Like, these kids are heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to agree. In my brain, like, Aria's dad literally does not even exist. Like, he's just a fabric. Like, in my opinion, she's just there, and I'm just her. I'm the only parent that she has. I'm the only parent that ever existed. You know, he's never been in her life. So it's like, I think sometimes if I get in my feelings, I'm kind of like, in general, men should be held accountable. Men should have that somehow just, I don't even know, like, have repercussions in some way, but I don't even know what they would be. It's to, like, just be a better person, be a better parent to their kid. But, like, I don't feel that way in regards to my situation. I am completely content with it just being me, just being her. I see it a lot, even with other people I'm just friends with online, like, just seeing how it's so easy for, like, the men to just be able to step away and, like, act like they don't have a kid that exists. And, like, it just feels like a deeper, like, jab, like, when your kid has this, like, medical, you know, complexity. Because, like, when Aria, the brief, like, her dad only saw her a couple of times, like, after she was first born. And their entire family, like, straight up told me they didn't want anything to do with her because she was never going to walk. She was never going to talk. And I'm choosing to keep her, you know, alive and being selfish because no one wants to see a kid that can't run and play, and she should just go be with Jesus if she can't be like other kids. And it was just a whole bunch of bullshit. And I'm just like, on top of everything, it's just like, it's so ableist. It's so just degrading, like, to her, to me, to the whole situation. But I don't know. It just feels wrong. And I see it a lot, unfortunately, like, where there are, you know, kids that have a child with some kind of medical complexity, some kind of disability, where, like, the dad is just not engaged with that kid at all.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have that attachment with their kid. And I think, I don't know, I don't have any experience with it other than just knowing people that have kids, but I just feel like dads have a different attachment to kids than moms do, because we carry them, we gave them life. Like, we have this, like, innate, like, love for our kid because we created their life, even though the father did take place in that as well. But they need their love reciprocated in some other kind of way to, like, get that love from their kid.
I can't even imagine the level of anger and resentment and, like, sorrow you must harbor over the fact that these people are actually choosing not to be part of your children's lives. Because, like, I love your kids and I've never met them. And, like, I see them from the other end of a screen, and I'm like, I want to just, like, be with that. Like, can we, like, have a little community and, like, buy a neighborhood together and, like, all live together? You know what I mean? Like, right. I want to be with your kids, and I've never even met them in person. And so to, like, have people that it's literally, like, blood related choose to not be part of their lives must be just, I don't even know the words, disgusting.
It brings out this rage inside of me that I can't even put into words. And I actually, like, had to unfollow Logan's dad on social media, like, I think it was, like, 2 years ago in December, because he was choosing to go on vacations and choosing to do all these things when, but yet he didn't have time to come see Logan. And that just really, like, it was making me really unhealthily angry all the time. And so I just had to make the choice to cut that out. And then I also, like, if he doesn't text me first, I don't text, like, I don't give him any information. Because obviously he doesn't care, or he doesn't think about it. And so why do I need to put my energy and my, like, mental capacity into, like, keeping someone in the loop that clearly doesn't care enough? So once I did that, it got a little bit easier in a way. Like, I still get mad and I still have a lot of resentment, but it's not in my face all the time. Like, I just, what I don't know doesn't hurt me, I guess.
Yeah.
But what also sucks so much is that when he does visit, they do have, like, this undeniable connection. And I can see that he does care about him a lot. And so then I get pissed off about that. Like, why aren't you doing more? Because I do see that, like, they have this undeniable connection from day one. And that makes me mad too. But, selfishly.
Right.
But, like, why doesn't that motivate you to be better? So what? He's in a wheelchair, and so what? He doesn't walk. Like, he can do so many other things. Like, walking does not.
Do you guys also think, like, your experience with both Arya's dad and Logan's dad has, in a lot of ways, really jaded your image of kind of men or getting men back involved in your life to be, like, near your children? Has that had, like, a huge effect on kind of visualizing that it'd be incredibly hard to find somebody that would be wanting to be a part of your lives?
You can't just date in this kind of life. Like, one, how am I supposed to go on a date with someone? How am I supposed to get to know someone? How am I supposed to give energy into a relationship when I literally have none to give? Like, the only energy that I have left to give, because it all goes to Arya and my animals, and then if I have a lick of energy left at the end of the day, I'll eat and I'll do maybe something very, very small for myself, and that's if I'm lucky, like to get a shower or whatever that day. Like, I don't have childcare to, like, go on a date. I can't go on trips. I can't be really child free to even attempt an actual relationship. And unfortunately, people are just ignorant. You know, a lot of people, one, men for some reason just shit on single moms in general. They're just like, who wants to? There's a reason you're a single mom, but they don't know all the backstory to everything. I just feel like dating is truthfully out of the books, unless a random, like, doctor one day was like, you know what, Rachel, I love you. But that'd be, like, all the kind of wrong in the world that would probably not happen. But I don't think I'm picking up people at therapy or at the doctor's office, you know? So, yeah, it's definitely complex. And then I think for me recently, I've been in, like, a weird headspace as far as, like, I don't want to date. Like, I have no desire to date and don't obviously have time to do so. But it makes me sad that, like, I don't have the option to, like, ever, I mean, there are other options, but, like, just having, like, a family. Like, I wish there was, like, a family dynamic where there was, like, a husband and there was, you know, Arya. And then what if, you know, Arya to have a sibling? Like, I don't have that option to give her, you know, a sibling. And realistically, I think with all the trauma and everything from birth, I don't think I would want to physically have another child. But it's just like, I don't even have the option, even if I had the option, you know?
It goes back, like, full circle with the whole system holding you guys down, particularly as single mothers.
For sure.
Because most of us will go out and meet a partner through friends of a friend, work, you know, somebody, you know, and obviously there's a lot of stay-at-home moms out there. It doesn't have to be that you have a disabled child. And there's even, you know, but there are certainly probably stay-at-home moms that are single as well. But when you add all those additional layers, it's like you don't even have the opportunity other than maybe like Tinder. Like, and who's meeting?
And that's a joke now.
Yeah, like,
nothing, nothing good comes out of that.
Nothing good comes out of Tinder.
Nothing good comes
and
out
so
of
that. So it's like you're not even given the, like, opportunity to, like, even be out there to meet somebody. Because, listen, I am sure. I do not hate men enough to say that there is not a man out there who would take on your two beautiful children. I'm sorry. Like, there's definitely men out there that are freaking amazing. And I've even seen other moms find guys. But, again, it's the system holding you down where it's like it's not even – there's so many things that don't even give – you guys an opportunity to really, like, actually go out and find somebody.
It's so ironic too, though, right? Because it's like this
antiquated.
Old, thank you, antiquated.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Idea that, like, that's the American dream, right? Like, that's that's what everyone should do. Everyone should be a mom and a dad and two kids and this and like that's. I mean, that's what I feel like is pushed on a lot when it's talked about here, you know, but then you're put in a situation where you can't get to that level at all. And a lot of it is the government's putting you in that situation.
That and the ableism of society, because a lot of people will see a disabled child and just see a burden. Mm-hmm. When in reality, yes, there are hard times, but I hate to tell you, there are hard times with any children. So I don't really want to hear that that's a valid excuse. But the way that ableism runs rampant in society, it looks like they are taking on something so ridiculously hard that they don't even want to look at you guys because they're like, no, thank you.
Or they'll be a hero for, you know.
That's what I was just going to say. The savior complex.
Child. Oh. And then that's also, like, where the system kind of shits on us, too. Like, if you get married, you'll likely lose, you know, SSI, Medicaid, all that. And then you have to depend on this man to provide for you and your child that's not his. And then that kind of makes me feel some type of way because I still wouldn't be able to work. So
yeah.
Then I'd have to be, like, I don't know, reliant on somebody else, and I hate that idea.
It feels like there's, like, no, like, resolution, like, there's no, and not, like, end in sight, but, like, there's nothing that you can see that's going to change that situation to make that, you know, achievable. So I feel like that's also what kind of makes it hard.
Yeah, they make it almost hopeless. It really, in certain circumstances, it's so isolating. It's so damn isolating and oppressive.
It's extremely isolating and, like, not even just, like, in a relationship with, like, a partner, but friendships. Like, I truly don't really have any other friends other than people I've met online. And, like, that's great because I love all of you, but, like, there's nobody near me. Like, I'm just alone.
Yeah, I hear you.
Hope, for you, I know really your mom is like your person. She's helping you. I know that she's always kind of there for you. But even that is, it's got to be so hard because there's still only so much your mother can do. And there's only so much your mother can give you in terms of like a relationship.
And I do love my mom a lot and she does help me in the ways that she can. But then also, like, she doesn't always want to watch him. Like, and she doesn't know our day-to-day schedule. Like, she'll, you know, help a little bit in the evening, like, entertaining him while I'm getting his feed and his meds and all that. But, like, it's not like a partner would be, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, she does support me a lot. But also, I don't want to live with her my whole life.
Well, that's nobody's goal is to live with their mother.
Exactly. So, like, eventually I would love to be able to, like, you know, get our own place and, like, all that. But right now, like, that's just not even remotely a possibility, which is, like, just sucks. But I am very lucky to have my mom, for sure. but it's definitely not the same.
I feel like even if they gave, like, I know some states kind of do it, but like, even if there was some kind of assistance to help, like, I know this, you know, being a single parent to a child that has whatever kind of medical complexity, like, there should be more support than just giving them SSI, because they have to fact, you know, when you have a child that is born and then they have some kind of disability, majority of the time, one parent is quitting their job or like just staying home with that child. When you're a one parent household, you're that parent. And then what do? You know, when you can't work, you don't have support, you don't have family, you don't have school, daycare, childcare, you're kind of left with just scraping by on their SSI. And unfortunately, that is not sustainable to live off of, because for whatever reason, it isn't. And I just feel like there should be some factor in that that parent now cannot work because they're staying home to care for their child. But I feel like some states have like a paid caregiver like program, but I feel like majority of the states don't.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you're just kind of SOL.
It's so different per state, which is also annoying. It should just, there should be a federal standard. I totally agree with that. It shouldn't be that, oh, I'm lucky enough to live in this state, I get this. But there's also the fact that even if they were calculating, okay, well, it's a single family household, it's a single parent household, you know, now the parent is in a position where they can't work, there should be more support to guide and assist to get you back in the workforce if that is what you choose to do.
Right.
Meaning like these sort of like limitations they put blocks you, right? Because like if you make too much money, you get kicked out of a program. Meanwhile, maybe they could do like a transitional phase where like, oh, you can make this much money for a certain amount of years, still get the support until you're like on your feet. It's the fact that it's so black and white. They're like, this is it. If you make more than this, you're done. And then if you make more than that, even a dollar more than what they're saying, it's still not livable off that like amount of money. So you can't even transition out of like the hole they essentially put you in.
This is where I tend to go down the rabbit hole of like the ableism and the eugenics and all that within society, right? Because I mean, I personally think that they do that on purpose because it leaves families with one of the only options, which is institutionalizing your child. If you need to get out of the hole, you need to get a job, there's not enough services, there's not enough programs, there's not enough funding, put your kid in an institution. And I think that that's where this all like really, you know, it's so unfortunate that we live in a society that the government funded programs are not good.
Not even remotely.
Yeah. And instead of like giving the one-on-one services and I don't even want to say that because I know like early intervention and whatever exists, but in terms of like childcare and things like that, there's very limited resources for in-home nursing, childcare. I mean, respite's a joke. I don't know about where you guys are, but like respite for us,
respite's
it's like
a joke here.
2 hours a week of respite, I think that we would get. Like, what is
there
that going to
go,
do? Yeah. So like, what's that going to do? Right. And so there, I honestly think they do this to push families to put their kids in, you know, institutions. I mean, it was happening left and right, what, down in Florida? That was just a thing,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's still
that article.
I mean, we are
in some places, it's still a thing.
That's the thing. Like, we are barely a stone's throw away from when that was commonplace. Like, that was you had a disabled kid, you had, you know, medically complex kid, institutionalize them. Like, we're not far from that. You know, that was like yesterday, essentially, in you know, the existence of.
We're
time.
Also a generation that's trying to break all of that.
Too. We are. And that's the problem. I don't think they want everyone to break that. Like, I don't think.
Well, fuck you, okay? I'm doing it.
I know. But, like, really. I mean, if they wanted to, I think that there would be more, you know, work done to try to get the resources and the funding and all that to try to help single mothers and families that are struggling and families that have disabled children. And it just doesn't exist. And it's dangerous.
Well, I remember like when Aria was in the NICU, which she was really, really sick. You know, when she was in the NICU, she came home on hospice because they didn't think that she'd make it. But they pushed so heavily for me to sign a DNR, for me to let her go.
Yeah, see?
And I was told over and over and over, you can't handle her care. You know, you're a single mother. It's okay if you just let her go. Like, you can't handle and care for her. Like, it's going to be too much, which, you know, that's pretty much what you're saying. You know, I think they probably knew, unfortunately, that there's just not support. It is going to be a complicated life, but I'm glad that she's here and that, you know, she overcame and she's, you know, doing everything that she is. And it's sad that she was looked at then to think that she shouldn't be here just because of the fact that she has, you know, disabilities and was going to have a complex life, you know. But I think it really just stems down to the fact that they were like, you know, this kid is going to be expensive. It's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to be hard for her to care for her because she's one person just watching this complex child, you know, all day and night. And yeah, I feel like if there were institutions in Ohio, they probably would have tried to do something like that.
I'm sure they would have. And that's so inappropriate, you know, to also put you in that mindset, right? Because here you are, you just want to get your child healthy enough to get out of NICU. I'm sure that's where all our heads were at every second we were in NICU, is how the hell do I get my child healthy enough to get out of NICU?
Yeah.
Right. And then to even put that thought in your head, like, hey, you're not even going to be able to handle this. Like, are you sure you even want to go home?
And it was terrifying coming home.
Yeah. I mean, it's
that was pretty much what it was like.
Going home with any child.
For Logan, I was just pushed out of the NICU. No education, nothing. They're like, oh, time for you to go. Bye. And I had no idea what I was doing.
Same.
None.
Well, you guys are rocking it, though. Can I just say that? Because, listen, this life is so, so damn hard. But you guys have two amazing children. Like, you really, really do. I hope it's not just us. I hope other people in your lives are telling you that you are doing such a good job, and I see the work you guys do. And those kids are so damn amazing, and I don't have an ounce of pity for you. What I have is I have rage for how you're forced into certain situations. Like, it's not right, and I really hope our listeners and who, you know, if we can get this out here, that your voices are genuinely heard, because these are valid concerns about how society treats single mothers and treats disabled kids on top of it. Like, it's not right, but it's also just, God, it is so damn aggravating. It makes me angry.
It is.
If I sit and think about it, I get sick.
And I'm not even in your shoes, and it makes me sick when I think about it too much, because there's such a lack of logical explanation for the shit that they do. Like, I'm just, I can't even wrap my head around it half the time. And I just want you guys to know that you are amazing parents, and your kids are but equally amazing.
For sure.
Thank you.
For sure.
They're thriving because of you guys.
They are.
Well, thanks.
And I love you guys.
Yeah, and we really want to thank you guys.
I love you guys too.
We want to thank you guys so much for coming on.
I could not do this life without our group.
Same.
And, you know, just the support 100%. That you guys give us. It's just like, even when we just need to rant to someone who, like, even remotely might understand. And, you know, you guys, you know, don't always, none of us, like, totally understand everybody's day-to-day struggles. But it's just having that core group literally gets me through the worst
day. Same.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. We love you guys. And I don't know. I guess we're all hoping for some sort of wave of change. But we're trying.
I think we can get there eventually. It's just going to take a while.
Small steps, but at least we're going in the right direction. And thank you guys so much for joining us today and having a chat. I know it probably wasn't super easy to talk about some of the topics. I know it was super personal, but I really appreciate your perspectives. And I really, really, really wanted listeners to hear what you had to say.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, guys. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. And until next time, thanks. Thanks for tuning in to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast, where we unpacked our unfiltered opinions and ideas.
Be sure to connect with us on social media at Bitching and Bullising for more unapologetic dissent against the mainstream parenting narrative. And for an extra gritty perspective and ad-free listening, become a Patreon subscriber. You can visit us at www.bitchingandbullising.com for previous episodes, merch, and more.
Hey there, parents! We've got something incredible to share with you. Have you heard about Adapted Design? They're making a real difference for families with disabled children.
Absolutely. They're all about empowering you to adapt toys and products for your child's unique needs.
And here's the game changer. Their how-to book, Let's Adapt for Everyone. It's a guide to DIY adaptations, helping you save big on those expensive adapted products that oftentimes break the bank.
Imagine the joy of customizing toys just for your kids. Visit adapted-design.com and let's make every playtime extraordinary.
That's adapted-design.com because every child deserves a world of possibilities.